This is Jim Engster. Thank you for joining us for Talk Louisiana. Matt Doyle producing, and our leadoff guest is Lynn Apkar. He is the Wendell Gray Switzer Jr. Endowed Chair in Media Literacy, also a fellow at the Riley Center for Media and Public Affairs, a professional in residence. He spent 24 years at the New York Times prior to joining the faculty at LSU. 1991 to 2015, he was with the New York Times, and from 1976 to 1989, he worked with the Wall Street Journal. He has been an editor, a reporter, and served in both Washington, D.C. and in Asia. And he has called Baton Rouge home now for the last 4 years. And good morning to you.
Good morning, Jim.
Lynn Apkar. And tonight's a night in which you can meet this fine gentleman and some of his associates at the Archives Building. There will be a forum on fake news. What's going on?
Well, we're going to talk about what's going on and try to bring people up to date on a number of kind of parallel developments in fake news. One will be the Mueller investigation, which touches on Louisiana in a couple ways, but looks at the media manipulation during the 2016 campaign. We're going to talk a little bit about that. We're also going to talk a little bit about how you can, you know, a few tips about how you can detect fake news, some checks you need to run when you're suspicious about an article. We'll talk about that. And I pass out my handy-dandy Don't Get Faked Out cards, which we have distributed thousands here in Louisiana and elsewhere to middle school, high school, and certainly our own students at LSU, which gives tips on how to take care, how to basically guard against being taken in by fake news.
And you're going to focus on one story in particular.
I don't know that I could. I haven't done that lately. We'll show some examples of fake news that circulated in the 2016 campaign, that the big ones being the Pope endorsed Trump, or Hillary was negotiating to sell weapons to ISIS. There was one story I love to tell, which I'll probably tell informally tonight, about a young guy who came actually to LSU to explain what he did. He completely fabricated a story about pre-marked ballots for Hillary Clinton in Ohio about a month before the election, wanted to game the system, Google, Facebook, and all that, and sat down at his kitchen table and wrote a story that said a warehouseman had discovered these pre-marked ballots in a battleground state. They're pre-marked for Hillary Clinton, and I'll tell you the rest tonight.
877-217-5757 is your number. Lynn Apkar, by the way, is a board member for WRKF, in addition to his other duties in this community and at LSU. And if you'd like to send an email, talk@talklouisiana.org. And there's a Russian connection to fake news that you also will focus upon, I'm told, about a chemical plant in Louisiana. What was going on with this story?
Well, this is a story that's quite intriguing, but nobody really has gotten to the bottom of it. When I talk about it in Louisiana, people are just stunned that it's all but certain that a St. Petersburg, Russia troll factory descended on Centerville, Louisiana on 9/11/2014. I teach this example because it's a very transparent look at how a fake news or a hoax was orchestrated online. The story, the hoax was that there had been an explosion at the chemicals plant in Centerville, and that toxic fumes were leaking into the atmosphere, and people should take cover, go inside, all the usual kinds of warnings. Why Centerville, Louisiana? We don't know. Why Colombian Chemicals? We don't know. But there's no question that they orchestrated a hoax to try to scare, confuse, and generally kind of test the Louisiana populace, if you will, with a completely fabricated emergency. They had gone to work at this at least a month or so beforehand with a fake Facebook page, a fake Wikipedia entry, a fake YouTube entry video, and they had concocted a fake CNN.com homepage with a photograph that was also fake.
Well, Centerville, Centerville, Louisiana, is in St. Mary Parish, not to be confused with Centerville, Mississippi, which is the birthplace of our junior senator, John Neely Kennedy. But Centerville, Louisiana, was the focus of a fake news piece apparently emanating in Russia. Why would they focus on St. Mary Parish?
We don't know. It's a chemical plant. It's a small community. It's dominated by this plant, which makes carbon black, by the way, the black dye that's in lots of hard plastic. It was put to rest in about 3 or 4 hours, mostly by mainstream media, the Times-Picayune and others, who figured out that there was nothing to this. But that was not before it scrambled all the usual first responders, meaning they were confused. The Homeland Security chief in the parish, I talked to him. He said he called the plant. They knew of nothing. They kept checking. There were several hours devoted to trying to running down whether this was at all true. Again, no one is quite sure why. But it is illustrative because it teaches us a little bit about how far, frankly, fake news attacks have come, because this was a very crudely orchestrated attack, knocked down in a few hours. We'll talk about that a little bit. But it showed how to do it and how the Russians thought they could do it. It also shows that, fast forward 4 to 5 years later now, they are much more sophisticated. They're much more polished. And they are, if they had Centerville to do all over again, it might have taken a lot longer to knock down.
The event tonight begins at 5:30. You'll be out in time to see the State of the Union, the Wade Martin Auditorium at the State Archives Building, 3851 Essen Lane, and I'm told refreshments will be served. I don't know, any alcoholic beverages?
This is up to the Friends of the Old State Capitol, which decided that they wanted to put this on and asked me if I would speak many months ago. It's timely now. We'll get you out before the State of the Union, no question about that. I don't talk that long. But we'll have a good discussion about it beginning around 5:30.
And this is from a man who's worked in the highest places of American journalism, the New York Times and the Wall Street Journal. Today in the New York Times, there is a front page story in the business section, Daring to Say No to Big Oil. And it's about the ExxonMobil controversy in Louisiana. And the story quotes General Honoré, who was on this show last week, saying it's been a David versus Goliath story in the Louisiana Capitol, where a grassroots coalition of black and white churches, activists, and ordinary citizens have successfully clamored to democratize a system that needed to dole out billions in property tax breaks without giving the local school boards, city councils, and other government entities that depend on those taxes any say in the matter. Now, this story has been covered, I think, well in The Advocate, but the editorial page basically said don't force Exxon to go to Texas. I think the tax breaks involving Exxon are $690,000 a year for a company that just reported $6 billion in profits for one quarter. I don't think they're leaving Baton Rouge over $690,000, Lynn Apkar.
No, I don't think so either. I'm a newcomer to this community, so I'm not going to pretend to have a long, knowledgeable history about this issue. I do know that there has long been a relationship between the oil and gas industry and the state, and for a long time it was a very happy relationship, right? I mean, if you look at what governors way down the line were able to do with a lot of the largesse, you could find that they built a lot of good benefits going back several generations. On the other hand, that relationship has completely broken down, and the relationship between tax revenues collected and what the state needs to fix some of its problems, whether it's in higher education or in health, or in all forms of education, needs to be looked at. And if I were a local parish official or school board member, I too would deeply resent decisions being made far above my little head about whether or not a company like Exxon or Dow or any other large company should get breaks and not pay the taxes that I need to run my school district.
877-217-5757 if you'd like to talk with Lynn Apkar, who's lived in New York and in Washington. And Washington now is considered one of the most livable places in America because it has a big industry, politics. that doesn't have smokestacks and pollution and things that we have as a result of our reliance upon big industry. Lynn Apkar, some would say, though, politics is dirty in many other ways, and you've been right there in the middle of it. How was it?
I would say it gets very tiresome when both sides of Pennsylvania Avenue can't really get along. And one of the reasons why I decided that I wanted to leave Washington as my last one of my last assignments was that I just thought I didn't want to spend my last year or two chronicling two sides, the Congress and the White House, who just would squabble over everything. This was during the late years of the Obama administration and John Boehner's control over the House and Mitch McConnell in the Senate.
We'll return with Lynn Apkar of the Manship School of Mass Communication. Again, 877-217-5757 is your number, and we shall be back after this 90-second pause with more Talk Louisiana on WRKF. This is Jim Inkster. Pleased to have you with us for Talk Louisiana. You can send an email to talk@talklouisiana.org or give us a call at 877-217-5757. Coming next, we are slated to hear from Maxine Crump, president of Dialogue on Race Louisiana. But we are with Lynn Apkar, who's with the Manship School of Mass Communication, the Riley Center for Media and Public Affairs, and tonight at 5:30 in an event that is sponsored by Friends of the Old State Capitol and the Manship School. He will be presenting a forum, Russia and Fake News from Louisiana to the World. It will include an obscure fake news report believed to have been orchestrated from Russia involving a chemical plant explosion in Louisiana. This fictitious event was supposedly in the hamlet of Centerville, Louisiana. 877-217-5757. Rex Davey writes, actually, it's Miriam Davey in Lacombe listening online, says, ask Lynn Apkar what he thinks when one side of the partisan aisle does not care about the truth. When fake news is exposed, they simply move on to what she says is the next lie. That's the real issue, she says. The not caring, the zero-sum game, prevail or nothing. What do you think?
Well, I think that's the biggest risk to our democracy. I think when truth basically becomes this casualty, I mean, the president tells half-truths, partial truths, complete untruths. Other politicians do too, although he certainly gets the bigger platform. I think people give up trying to – the risk is anyway, and I think some people have done so, but the risk is that people just give up and say, I don't know what the truth is. I don't trust this source. I don't trust that source. So I'm just going to tune out. And frankly, one of the reasons why the Russians are – fiddling around with fake news, and they were doing a lot more than fiddling, and they're not the only foreign agents and country that's doing it. But one of the reasons why they're doing it is they'd like nothing better than to see the mechanics of our democracy erode. Mechanics of our democracy meaning our system of voting and our ability to digest information as voters and to make up our minds and decide what we want to do. The less we rely on public information, the less trustworthy we are of our leaders and our politicians, the bigger risk we have to our form of representative democracy. And I think everybody gets that. And I'm somewhat puzzled by the amount of energy that has been devoted to looking backward at the 2016 campaign, which I'm happy to talk about. I teach a class that looks deeply into the manipulation of information during the 2016 campaign, but by comparison, we are not looking all that rigorously at what's ahead, and protecting our own, again, the mechanics of democracy, voting booths, voting systems, and all that. Yes, there's a lot of money being devoted to new machines and all the rest of it, but what are we doing about making sure that this doesn't happen again?
Well, it's an interesting world we live in. There is no doubt. And right now, I think we're in a situation where we're going to have more of this, not less.
I certainly think so. I mean, you know, one of the more telling interviews occurred last year when Vladimir Putin talked to Megyn Kelly. I urge people to look at it. It's 2018, and it was. You know, he basically said, okay, if Russian private firms are manipulating the media, hacking the Democratic National Committee, stealing emails from major Democrats who are running Hillary Clinton's campaign, or certainly advising it at a top level. If they're doing all that, they're not breaking any Russian laws, so what do I care?
Wow. Well, journalists tend to be bad with numbers. And they're very smart people, but maybe that's why they become journalists, because numbers can be difficult to absorb. But, for example, right now the president's disapproval rating, I'm looking at Real Clear Politics, 55.5%. That's 56.
That's the disapproval rating.
Disapproval, 56%. Right. Last night, Lawrence O'Donnell was citing this number and saying there's no way he can be reelected with a number like that. Well, 54% of the people in 2016 voted against Donald Trump. They voted for somebody else, and he still won the election. So I would surmise that he's fully capable of winning an election with a 56% disapproval rate.
Statistics at this stage, February 2019, I mean, come on. I mean, it's way too early to know. Donald Trump is a formidable populist who can command an audience and command opinion in major ways. All presidents have. And, frankly, you've got a Democratic Party that so far in showing what candidates that are coming forward are moving left, not a little left, far left.
Oh, yeah.
And Donald Trump is standing right there and giving people a stark choice. And in my own humble opinion, unless the Democratic Party decides that they can run from a little bit left to center, not far left, they're not going to get anywhere. What does free education say to the unemployed chemical worker in Louisiana? Or what does other free things say to these people? They don't necessarily resonate. And if Trump basically says, look, we've got bad trade deals, and I solved that. We had bad health care, and I fixed a little of that. We have a terrible immigration policy, and I'm fixing a little bit of that. You could make a pretty good case that he deserves to be reelected.
877-217-5757, Phil in Jefferson Terrace. Phil, good morning. You're on Talk Louisiana.
Good morning, Jim. Yes, sir. I think the clown face of fascism is raising its ugly head again. This is the same thing Mussolini did to take over Italy. I mean, if you look at the dictatorship playbook, same thing, a common enemy, somebody to be afraid of. Watch out, son. It's coming hard and fast. There's a lot of money behind it, too.
Our friend Dan downtown often calls and talks about the corporate influence on journalism. Did you see that in journalism at the highest places in America?
No. You know, I was very lucky. I have great respect for the Sulzberger family, which controls the New York Times. I had great respect for the family that controlled the Wall Street Journal. They wanted a quality report. They believed, and their both families believed, long before the current generation was in power, that quality sells, and quality was what you wanted to do. And I never had any corporate pressure about anything. Now, when I got up into more senior ranks, I was well aware of business goals in terms of revenues and profits and all the rest of it. But nobody ever suggested that I make business journalistic decisions based on business goals. That people would have been highly upset with that.
Well, there was an editorial in the New York Times last Thursday from Farhad Manju saying that working in digital media is like trying to build a fort out of marshmallows on a foundation made of marbles in a country ruled by capricious and tyrannical warring robots. And the headline reads, Media Layoffs as Democratic Emergency. We had more of them last week with Gannett, and there are probably more to come. There are fewer and fewer people covering what's going on in our world. Is that having an impact on the level of discourse and otherwise?
Well, the level of discourse, sure. We can come back to this because at the same time the layoffs came out, there was an interesting study done about so-called news deserts where smaller footprints of local newspapers have developed simply because they're just not as ambitious as they used to be You know, we don't have to look very far down the road to see the Times-Picayune is not the same newsroom it used to be. The Advocate is holding on very nicely and
with
and
fewer
expanding.
People, though.
Yes, fewer people, but they've decided when John Georges took it over, he decided to make it an aggressive journalistic enterprise and a smartly run business, and he's having, you know, pretty good success at it. There are other examples around the country like that, but not enough. So what we are facing in some communities is a hollowing out of news reporting, and that does play into this whole problem with a lack of information for voters to make up their minds about what they want to do. Now, television can fill a void, but we all know that television, I think, frankly, in the 2016 campaign, fell down on the job, particularly in covering Donald Trump.
877-217-5757. Excuse me. We'll spend a few more minutes with Lynn Apgar, and then we'll hear from Maxine Crump here on Talk Louisiana. And what about the governor of Virginia? Can he withstand swirling controversy? We'll talk about it. This is Jim Inkster. Thank you for joining us for Talk Louisiana. On deck is Maxine Crump, the president and CEO of Dialogue on Race Louisiana. And we'll talk with her about a few matters, but primarily about what's going on in the great state of Virginia. But Lynn Apgar is with us for a few more minutes, and he is going to be at 5:30 this afternoon at the Archives Building on Essen Lane discussing fake news. So it is open to the public if you'd like to come. And I don't think there's a charge either. So you're welcome to come hear the pearls of wisdom from a man who worked 24 years with the New York Times and 13 years with the Wall Street Journal. Jerry in Lafayette. Jerry, you are on the air. Hi, Jerry.
I always want to say thank you to you, Jim, for having timely guests. And I want to ask Mr. Lynn Apgar, as most of y'all know, the Lafayette Advertiser lost 17 senior journalists over the weekend. They're senior reporters in education, government, sports. They're columnists. Everyone went over to the Advocate, which means the George family in Louisiana will have New Orleans, Baton Rouge, and Lafayette. And I want to ask Lynn, since he teaches at the Manship School, is the future of journalism to be a multimedia thing? As y'all all know, television follows print. The television reporters in town pick up the Advocate in the morning and decide what they're going to cover.
The short answer is yes, but that has not – it's actually less so today than it was, say, 30 years ago, 40 years ago, when the Washington Post owned several television stations. The New York Times also owned several regional television stations. Gannett, I think, still does own quite a number of television stations. They did this for a number of reasons. On the other hand – at the New York Times, which I'm most familiar with, we sold off the regional television stations when it came time to really focus on the disruption in the newspaper business and building a website. And others have followed suit like that. I don't know what the situation is at The Advocate. I don't think they own any of the local television stations here. But
they don't now.
Yeah, they don't now. But
they did.
They did. And when The Advocate was sold to John Georges, that's when the moment came where they halved off broadcasting with the Manship family and the rest. Short answer is yes, it is a multimedia thing. I thought the question you were going to ask is, what does this mean for Lafayette? And I'm bullish on The Advocate. I think The Advocate will deliver great coverage. They know that part of the state, primarily because they hired one of the top Gannett executives last year to kind of help run the business. So I would be bullish on them. I don't think it's going to be a news desert. It does mean that they will dominate the coverage, both print and web.
Well, thank you, Lynn Apgar. 5:30 tonight. You can hear more from Lynn Apgar at the Archives Building.